Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the C-Squared Podcast. This is your host Curtis with my co-host Aaliyah, and we are here today with Mr. Francis Roberts, formerly of the band Old Man Wizard and King Gorm. He's done a zillion dungeon synth projects. He's also worked doing a million other things as well that too long to name. So I'm just going to introduce him as Francis. Welcome, Francis. This is your second time on the C-Squared Podcast, I think.
Hi. Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah.
Second cool. Time.
Yeah, something like that. So anyways, to start off the interrogation, I'm going to hand it over to Aaliyah to begin the ceremony.
Begin the ceremony, the ritual of opening the nutshell, I guess, as it were. So if our listeners are not familiar with who you are, can you give us a brief summary, nutshell version of who you are, what you do, what projects you're working on within the realms of metal music in general?
Sure. Yeah. I am. I've been in enough bands that I forget which bands I've been in. Let's see. I have been doing more cinematic stuff lately. A lot of things with synthesizers, orchestral samplers, stuff like that. And let's see. Always working on getting better at doing stuff. That's one of the big ones. As far as current projects, I just did a new album that's like sort of chiptune-ish. It's not chiptune. And chiptune purists will appreciate that I'm not calling it that. But it's to people that don't care what chiptune actually means, it's sort of similar to that style, combined with sort of dungeon synth aesthetics. I'm working on a project with the band Great Electric Quest right now that I don't think that they've announced yet, but it's not anything too big. It's going to be relatively cool though. And let's see, always looking for another game or a movie to work on. I'm waiting to get a contract for some music for a video game right now, and mainly learning how to get better at everything. That's basically what my free time is right now, is learning new stuff.
Fair.
I have a quick question just as a follow-up. Sure. Do you not have a YouTube channel? I think you forgot about that.
I do. Some producing and stuff like that on YouTube. And I've been trying to do pretty in-depth live streams on music production stuff on Saturdays. So that's a good point, Curtis.
So... it sounds like synths might be your instrument of choice. Is that right? What would you say?
I don't know. I don't. I like synths because I don't really like any instruments that much. I like combinations of instruments more than instruments. In a band, you have an ensemble, and I think like electric guitar sucks by itself, but it's great in the context of like an electric guitar and a bass guitar and a drum kit, or like other iterations of that, like guitar bass drums. The classic like heavy metal lineup is fantastic, but I don't really like any of those instruments independently, so synths are fun when you're messing around by yourself or writing, because you can make them sound like combinations of things and make them operate in ways that you wouldn't be able to if you were playing all of the stuff by yourself. So that's sort of my interest in synthesizers, is the sound design element of it and the sequencing programming of it.
I have a question I want to follow up with, if that's okay, Aaliyah. Cool. So you do a few different genres, or you did when you were kind of like doing the bands and stuff. So how do you kind of keep it separate? Because you do, it's different styles, like dungeon synth and like the stoner rock type thing you were doing. It's different. So how do you kind of separate it out and market yourself, I guess, is a question.
I don't think I have a good answer for that, but I would say that certain with something like stoner rock or doom metal or something like that, you're you're looking for, it's almost like you're creating a vibe. You're looking for a sound that works when you're staying on like one note for a long time, you know, like the Black Sabbath type template where it's like, like you need to find some sound, like some combination of guitars and basses and stuff like that, that makes that sound really good. Cause you play that on, you know, an acoustic guitar and an upright bass, and a Black Sabbath song just suddenly goes from sounding really cool to sounding like two people playing one note over and over again. And it's super boring. So it's like about creating that combined sound. And it's about finding the right combination of tones and stuff like that. Whereas a lot of the other music that I do is more about choosing interesting notes and choosing harmonies that are appealing to me, which often don't sound good or aren't even possible on the ensembles that I've been a part of. So like a three-piece rock band, for example, could play, you know, like a four or five note chord, but if you're using distortion and stuff like that, it gets all messy sounding, and you start needing more people really fast or different instruments really fast. So I think that that's probably the biggest one, is that certain things just sound good on some instruments and sound terrible on other ones.
I was Curtis saying fair, but he's muted, so.
No. Oops.
You mentioned that you're kind of dabbling in film and video game soundtracks a bit. Have you done any in the past? And how did that get started?
I've done some short films. I did some work on a feature called The Spine of Night a few years ago. And that was pretty cool project. It was an animated, like, sort of fantasy horror style movie. I got to basically go to town on weird synth sounds. They wanted me more for sound design than the notes themselves. The reference tracks that they gave me from my catalog were just like the weirdest sounds they could find, I think. And it was a really fun project. And then for games, I've done some small projects. I haven't done anything that was like published by a familiar name or anything like that. So I'm just still getting into that. And I'm also getting into that from a sound design perspective. And I like I was saying, I like the combinations of sounds almost more than the instruments themselves. And so like making sound effects is about as fun for me as making music is. And I think that's, I don't know if that's a common thing for people that are in both of those fields together, but I think that's kind of probably a weird thing to hear from people that haven't dabbled in it.
Well, how are the processes different, or does it manifest kind of similarly in your brain?
It's sort of different applications of the same skill sets, I would say. So like whether you're creating stuff through synthesis or recording sounds and then modifying them, you're using sort of similar processes.
Is the thought process behind crafting this environmental feel different from crafting an album? Or
I think the biggest difference is that an album is a linear experience, like a movie, and a game or something similar to that would be an interactive experience where the person consuming the piece of media's input affects what they experience. So, you know, a really simple example would be like a shoot 'em up game. Someone, you know, clicks the mouse and you see visual feedback that there's like gunfire and there's like a, you know, a flash and a sound effect and maybe another sound effect as a result of that. And a lot of the sound design in games is more about nonlinear audio like that. So that's probably the biggest difference, but it's basically like applying the same processes. And these days there's fantastic tools that you don't need to be a great at computer programs to do it. You still have to understand logic, but you don't have to like logic the concept, not logic the program, to be clear, right? Since that's a very popular music program.
That was a question.
and there's basically great frameworks for preparing that stuff and having it interact with someone else's program. So I don't feel like I need to spend too much time focusing on being a good computer programmer.
Sure.
But, yeah.
You just put out, well, I don't know about just, but you put out an album recently that was actually the soundtrack for a tabletop game.
Yeah, yeah.
How did that work? What was that process like?
It was almost like a, I wouldn't call it like a bet, but I'm a group of my friends. I have a few groups of friends that do tabletop gaming. It's like a big hobby of mine, I would say. It was mainly like when we would all play D&D, we would, you know, put on soundtracks, just put on like whatever, like Final Fantasy or Conan the Barbarian or some like, you know, fantasy media that has a soundtrack that we felt was like fun or adding to the experience. And at some point I was like, hey, why don't I score the next one? And I'll like make, you know, themes for characters and like make, you know, sort of more generic sounding like music to play in the background when the characters are like in a town or something like that. And it was sort of like a first attempt at that, and I think it turned out pretty cool. I'm doing it again with a little bit more informed of what it ended up actually being like integrating that in a tabletop game, because that's it's almost like a live performance where you're like figuring out what's happening and deciding what to play. It's like a DJ performance almost.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I don't have any experience DJing, so I don't know what that's like, but that's what it seemed like.
Well, that sounds like kind of unique, you know, so I was curious about it. That's so cool. Mm-hmm. And it's like a way to get inspiration. Like I know some people struggle with inspiration, and that's one way you just manifested the inspiration on its own.
Yeah, kind absolutely. Of. And that's how inspiration works. It's like you can either wait for it to come to you, which it won't, or you can find it. And it ends up being more about like being creative in the ways that you find the inspiration. Because, you know, a lot of people's inspiration, they don't think of themselves as finding it, but they're, you know, going out to the bar after work, interacting with friends. They're finding stories, and those stories inspire them. And if they, you know, locked themselves in the closet for a month, I think that they'd have the one story that they locked themselves in the closet for the month, but it would be a pretty lonely, boring story, and they wouldn't have any more after that. So like, if you just make stories up, you can use those as inspiration. And I think that personally, I think making up bad stories is a great place to practice that, because then you don't attach yourself to it when you're writing. You're just like, I'll write a, you know, a song about the line of ants that is swarming my lunch that I left out on the countertop yesterday, right? And you end up with a bad song, and you got practice writing a song and practice finding inspiration. And over time you find ways to figure out which of those things are actually going to lead to something you like.
Yeah, I don't even know if this actually helped the person, but they were struggling writing an artist bio, and I suggested that they write it badly first, like super over dramatic and corny, something they would never write, and then hone it back from there.
Yeah.
They liked the idea. I don't know if they actually used it or if it actually helped them, but kind of the same concept.
Yeah. And that's speaking from experience, that will work every time. And the problem is convincing yourself to do it in the first place, but that always works. And I would say that in writing music or other creative fields I've, you know, dabbled in, it's like mostly like 90-95% editing. You just need to start with something. No matter how bad it is.
Curtis, do you have a follow-up?
Not to that. I want to go totally off topic, but
we can change topics. Yeah, that
cool.
Go ahead.
Cool. So let's talk about visuals. Because you did a very creative video back in November. Can you kind of go over your thought process? Because it was like the weirdest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life, but it worked.
Which video was that? The
You were going to ask me which video?
Well, I don't remember. When's November? Like, I don't remember which
when
one.
When the album released. Hot dogs, dude.
The hot dogs. Okay. Yeah, I prayed. Okay.
Yeah. You got a weirder video than that?
I might. I don't have to think about it. I think Jesus I've got some Christ. Good ones. But okay, yeah, that one was pretty good. I think the weirdest thing about that one, and me and the Reese, we talked about earlier, actually, the musician that I work with sometimes plays accordion. He's in Dread Crew of Oddwood. He was the he works in film, and he was the other person sort of responsible for that disgusting thing. And we were laughing about it because the thing about it that probably is the weirdest is the production quality, where it's like it's clearly like an expensive camera filming like this like disgusting experience. And
yeah, I could tell it was very high quality,
and it's like it's clearly like there shouldn't be a budget for it, and there wasn't. He, you know, he works in film, so he had stuff, and we it's not like we spent a ton of money making that happen. We spent some. But like I think that's the weirdest thing, is that it's like just, you know, really beautifully lit like shots of me like glistening and with ketchup and mustard and just delightful, right? I don't know what came that there's not much of a story behind it. I admin a hot dog fan group on Facebook, and me and some of my friends think that's funny. And we were planning to do a music video for that song, and we were busy, and we, you know, sort of like were shouting ideas at each other on the phone the night before. We didn't have, it wasn't planned at all. We just ended
you
up
just,
going. We
got, you we're just randomly add, yeah. ended up with like 200 hot dogs or 500 hot
well,
dogs.
Well, I mean, like they didn't like show up at the door. We like went to Costco and bought like 200 hot dogs, and then brought them over to and set up some lights, and like frantically texting friends trying to find extras, and got a couple of people. The woman in the video is my mom, actually.
Oh,
I think makes it even funnier.
Oh, okay. This gets even weirder then. Okay, so.
And then the other guy is Mike, who is he used to be in Dread Crew also, and anyway, he's definitely a team player. Some really like the shot of him like with the goblet of what is it, ketchup or mustard or something, just like draining it. So gross! I can't believe he did that.
As a resident of the Chicagoland area, I have to ask, how are the Costco hot dogs?
I think Costco hot dogs are pretty good. I would say I will, you know, be aggressive and say that I think the Chicago dog, although it's good, is pretty overrated.
No.
Tell me it's not after trying my two favorites. And you have to try them in their natural habitat.
What are they?
The two best hot dogs I'm aware of are the Tijuana. So next time you're in northern Mexico, Tijuana, or next time you're in San Diego, it's like a 45-minute drive to downtown Tijuana. The street stands in Tijuana, unbelievable hot dogs. Those are probably number one. And I love the Seattle ones. The Seattle street stands that open up after all the bars close on Capitol Hill, like 3 a.m., Seattle dog. The Seattle dog is like grilled onions and cream cheese and a bunch of stuff that sounds weird but works really well. And the Tijuana dog is bacon wrapped with chopped tomatoes, like 10 different condiments on it, like mystery condiment sauce. And usually like a grilled jalapeno on it or serrano pepper. Really, really good.
Sounds good. Can't argue with those toppings, honestly.
But yeah, I also do think the Chicago dog's good. I just don't think it's as good as people like want it to be.
It's a purist type thing, you know. But
is it called the Chicago or is it called the Dodger? Not Dodger.
Oh no, we call it a Chicago dog.
What's the Dodger dog? That's LA, right? LA Dodgers. Yeah. What am I saying? I don't know. I don't know sports.
I don't know sports teams either, so I didn't react as quickly as I should have.
So just to change the topic again, since we got 8 more minutes left. So let's talk about the Pantera reunion really quickly here, since it just broke. Because why not? I don't care. I think it's stupid personally.
I think they're gonna piss off and alienate like a huge percentage of their fans.
Do you think so?
Yeah, they're like real fans. I think that the people that are gonna attend the shows are people that listen to Pantera and don't realize that two of the like most important members are dead.
Yeah.
I think that's the target audience. And I think that it's, I think it's a big misstep from like a PR perspective. It will create a lot of press, but I think people are going to be just unhappy about it. And like, I mean, like I said, we talked about it a little bit before we started. It's like, I think it's Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony doing a Van Halen reunion like today. I think that's what it's the same thing as that. It's completely ridiculous. Like Phil wasn't even the original singer of Pantera. It's like,
that's true. I didn't even think about that part. That's true.
It's the most ridiculous, like, publicity stunt. Give me attention. I don't want to fall out of favor or lose relevance.
Money.
Like, just do what Metallica did. That's like Metallica's recent one is like way more respectful. Get some new fans, some younger people into metal. Like, I think, you know, look for licensing deals instead of like having a reunion. It's not a reunion, like, unless they figured out how to, like, you know, Herbert West Reanimator. Like,
yeah, I thought it was kind of weird too, because if I'm not mistaken, because I'm not a big Pantera fan, I do admit I do not really care for the band. I thought the brothers were the main songwriters in the band, so
it was their band. Like, I'm also not a huge Pantera fan, but like, I think that having said that, I'm not going to deny that Cowboys from Hell is like a perfect album and like paragon genre. You don't like it?
No.
Really?
Fuck no. Okay. I don't like it.
I hate the production on it. I hate the production on it, and it makes my ears hurt, and I have to listen to it. Side one and side two have to be on different days. I can't listen to it front to back. But I also think that every song is a perfect metal song.
Fair. I only like Far Beyond Driven. That's the only one I like. So, but anyways, Aaliyah, what's your opinion on this before we wrap up, since we only got like another 4 minutes left?
I don't have an opinion. I didn't even see the news. I haven't read any articles.
I just told you the news. Okay. It's Rex Brown. Yeah, and
based
it's
off of what you guys said.
Okay. It's Rex Brown and it's Rex Brown and Phil Anselmo reuniting as Pantera.
Yeah. I mean, if it's not the, all the people that were in the band when they broke up or whatever, it's not a reunion. It's like, it's different. And it's like,
aren't they in a band together already? I thought Rex was like in one of Phil's bands.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
The problem is I don't keep up with Phil Anselmo because he's just, anyways, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, I would say that licensing deals are the way to go if you're trying to still
be relevant.
Be relevant. Yeah. Like, that's how people become relevant anyway. I was just listening to Finn McKenty's History of Evanescence, and the reason they got so popular was because they had a song in Daredevil. Like, getting your songs in movies, TV shows now on Netflix and stuff like that, that's how you become relevant. And
yeah, well, when was the last time you thought about Kissed by a Rose, the Seal song, being from Batman?
It was on my wedding reception playlist, so 2 years ago. Yeah. But
yeah, it's like, I think that's my favorite example of like two people in the 90s, like, that were paying attention to movies and stuff like that. Like, that was like the song from Batman. And now it's just like the most ubiquitous, like, R&B song ever.
So we have to wrap up now. So Aaliyah, do you have any final question for Francis? A short one.
I don't have any a time. You can't tell me I have no time and then ask me if I have a question.
McDonald's or Wendy's? How about that?
Okay, McDonald's or Wendy's?
I think that I don't like either. And I think I've eaten at both of them combined like 4 times. And I don't know which one's which. Like, even like on tours and stuff when there's nothing else to eat. Like, I think I've been to McDonald's maybe twice and Wendy's maybe once, and probably one extra time to one of them by chance. But you know, the Friday thing, it's like a thing that some fast food restaurants do where they do French fries for free. I think McDonald's gives the free French fries, with no catch, and Wendy's, makes you buy something else. So probably McDonald's.
Okay. Great American Golden Arches. Well, with that, thank you so much for coming on. I feel like we have so much uncovered ground, but, hopefully we'll have you back again soon.
I'd love to come back.
Awesome. And then for our listeners, until next time, make like a bull and throw those horns up.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C-Squared.